We're looking at work and the Christian life because the gospel addresses all of life. It's not just about how we get to heaven without any implications for anything on the trip or the journey or what life's about. It's about every aspect of life in the here and now as well as in the eternity. And the question in the here and now that most of us face in life is the role and place of work in our life. And it's not just the Christian's question. The work-life balance, the office-family tensions of modern life affects us all and is commonly discussed. Next to the real estate prices in Sydney, it's the secondly most common discussed barbecue topic as work-life balance. The Premier of Tasmania has just resigned, citing conflict over time, priority and family, the priority problems between his job and his family as Premier, and that's his reason for resigning. He's been replaced by a single woman who presumably will have different senses of pressures and times, but not family life, work pressure. And you wonder, can somebody rule our country federally or in the state and have a family as well? Now, we Christians have the same tensions as the rest of the community, but we have added to that tension because we have very high priority we place on family life and relationships, and we have our commitment to the spread of the gospel throughout the world and throughout our friends and colleagues, and we also have our fellowship commitments at church and in the home. But the question is much bigger than just time conflict. It's also the place and priority of work in our life. What is the meaning of work? Has work got any meaning? Why do we work? What do we expect? What do we hope to get from work or to achieve by working? For some, their work is boring, soul-destroying clock watching. For others, it's fulfilling and exciting and meaningful. And for some of us, like long-term aeroplane pilots, I understand it's 95% boring and that last 5% terrifying. For some, their work is just meaningless. Whatever they do today, it's gone tomorrow. I worked in a job like that once where every day I filled out a whole set of papers and I'd finished and the next day I'd arrive and exactly the same set of papers were there on the desk and I had to fill those out for the rest of the day, and then next day when I arrived, there they were again. It never seemed to be anything but the myth of Sisyphus. For others, their work is really meaningful. They can see the contribution they're making to the good of the world and society. And yet for others, their work is more than meaningful. It is the meaning. It is who they are. It is their life. It is their experience. I am a, and that defines, explains, and this is who I am. This is what I am. Most of you don't look like you've reached my stage of life where you read obituaries regularly. You'll get there just after you start visiting antique shops. But when you reach that stage of reading obituaries regularly, it's very interesting to see what the obituary writer thinks is of the essence of this person's life and how often it's their work which is the defining element of their life. Some are faced with the regular rounds, though, of weekends and Mondayitis. You know, Monday through Wednesday, it's what I do last weekend, and Wednesday through Friday, it's what am I going to do next weekend. Others, faced with the depressing rejection of long-term unemployment, would love to have the kind of work that others complain about having to turn up to on Monday. For being deprived of work has let them desire never to complain about work again. You see, we have the lazy, indolent, and the hyperactive workaholics, the greedy capitalists and the feather-bedding socialists. Every kind of thing comes under this heading of work, doesn't it? What message do we Christians have for our society about work? What message do we have for ourselves about work? Is our work part of our discipleship? Are we called by God to this work that we are doing? Is my work my vocation from God? Or is it just a mission field in which I spend my time meeting people so that I may evangelize them? Is the work I do itself important? Or are we to pursue excellence in our work? Or is that a distraction from our real pursuit, the pursuit of holiness? Will our work last beyond the grave? Will it be there in the judgment day? Next to sleep, work is our greatest time commitment. And so what's it all about? In fact, what is work? How do we define work? Is voluntary work work? Or is it only work when we're paid for it? That is, when a woman looks after children at home, is that work? Only a stupid male would ask that question. If you want to know whether it's work, you go and do it someday and you'll find out what real work is like. But in terms of definition, does it make any difference if the woman spending all day at home looking after children is the mother of the children or is the paid nanny? If she's their nanny, feminists will call it work. If it's the mother, they'll call her just a mum. But what's the difference? The work that they're doing is the same. In fact, if anything, the mother is more likely to do more work than the nanny. So what do we mean by the word work? The definition of work in your average dictionary is something along the line mental, physical effort done in order to achieve a purpose or result. And that's a good definition because it's a general cover-all definition. I mean, that'll work for a pulley system, won't it? It's just work. Now, I don't want to limit today's discussion to paid jobs because of the characteristic of biblical workview, but the most common usage today is that work is financially remunerated effort. But Christians do all kinds of things in voluntary service and the not-for-profit service and sector. And I'm not sure that we really want to define work down like that. I think that already loads the question too much. So it's the first definition I'm kind of thinking of. It's just the broad sense of it. But there is within the Bible and within reality a sense that work is usually unpleasant or hard and is opposed to leisure and rest and pleasure. And so there is another definition of work, that is doing the things that I have to do rather than the things I want to do. And there is that element of work in it as well, because it's generally unpleasant, but you see, the workaholic doesn't understand that definition. Now, I don't know which of these microphones is doing that cackling noise, but it'd be helpful if we turn this one off anyway, that's up here, so I know that it's the one that's on me that's doing it. To put our modern feelings about work into biblical perspective, I thought we'd start with the book of Ecclesiastes. The book of Ecclesiastes. I'm using page numbers for the cathedral Bibles if you have one. If you haven't got one because you've got your own, well done, good on you, find it yourself. And so we need to find Ecclesiastes, which I didn't write on my page numbers on my notes, but it is on page 667. Questions of life, without actually giving you an answer until you come to the last chapter, which frustrates us a little. It reflects what a person, unguided by the revelation of God's word, without reason of revelation, would make of the life of this world. Just living under the sun, what do you make of it? Chapter 3 teaches us that God has put eternity into our hearts so that we may know that there is some meaning, but not so that we would know what the meaning is. So I know it's meaningful, but I don't understand. It's like listening to someone speaking in a foreign language. I know it's meaningful, but I just don't know what it means, that's all. And so the king, in his wisdom, seeks to find the meaning of life and death, of himself and of the universe, by pursuing all kinds of alternatives to wisdom in life. And his opening remark shows the problem he's dealing with. Verse 2, vanity of vanities, says the preacher, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. What does man gain by all the toil at which he toils under the sun? Right there, the vanity of life is seen in the work of life. What do you get? What profit comes? What's the result of all your work, of all your toil? Toil and work are very often at the forefront of his sense of meaninglessness. And yet, throughout life seems meaningless. Work is almost always hard toil and effort, but it makes the very big question for us, well then what's the point? I mean, if it was easy and happy, you wouldn't ask the question, but it's hard and difficulty, and so what do I get? He keeps questioning the role and place of work in his life. But there are three things in particular that keep coming back to the conclusion that life is meaningless because work is meaningless, and work is meaningless because life is meaningless. Everything is in vanity in my endeavours. Firstly, there's death. I'm going to read quite a few verses here. Let's just look at them as we see. Chapter 2, verse 18, death, notice, and work. 2:18, I hated all my toil in which I toil under the sun, seeing that I must leave it to the man who will come after me. And who knows whether he will be a wise or a fool, and yet he will be master of all for which I toiled and used my wisdom under the sun. This is also vanity. So I turned about and gave my heart up to despair over all the toil of my labours under the sun. Because sometimes a person who has toiled with wisdom and knowledge and skill must leave everything to be enjoyed by someone who did not toil for it. This also is vanity and a very great evil. What is a man from all the toil and striving of heart from which he toils beneath the sun? For all his days are full of sorrow and his work is a vexation. Even in the night his heart does not rest. This also is vanity. You work really hard to die. Come across to chapter 5, verse 15. Chapter 5, verse 15. And he came from his, as he came from his mother's womb, he shall go again, naked as he came, and shall take nothing for his toil, that he may carry it away in his hand. This also is a grievous evil. Just as he came, so shall he go. And what gain is there to him who toils for the wind? Moreover, all his days he eats in darkness and much vexation and sickness and anger. Behold, what I have seen to be good and fitting is to eat and to drink and find enjoyment in all the toil with which one toils under the sun, the few days of his life that God has given him, for this is his lot. Everyone also to whom God has given wealth and possessions and power to enjoy them and to accept his lot and rejoice his toil, this is the gift of God. God allots to us. Some of us live long, some of us live short. But all your work, it doesn't add up to anything. You come naked, you leave naked. It's an old saying, there's no pockets in a funeral shroud. What you have is what you have. I mean, you can build a whole army of terracotta soldiers to guard you, but you're still naked in the grave, aren't you? Well, come across to chapter 9, verse 9. Chapter 9, verse 9. 9 and verse 9. Enjoy life with the wife whom you love all the days of your vain life that he has given you under the sun, because that is your portion in life and in your toil at which you are toil under the sun. Whatever your hand finds to do, do it with your might, for there is no work or thought or knowledge or wisdom in Sheol to which you are going. Sheol's the place of the dead. There's no thought, there's no wisdom, there's no knowledge, there's nothing. I mean, where you're going to wind up, you may as well enjoy it now while you're awake, because it's a long sleep. There's nothing there. Death is the inevitable future. Death mocks all that we have done, good or bad, for there's no gain. Death gives our work to the next generation who may not value it. So we may as well eat and drink and be merry, for there's no point to mortal life. It's not the work, but the enjoyment of life, if you're so blessed to enjoy the work that you've been given, for there is no other point than the transitory enjoyment of what you're doing at the time. Now, there is a second reason to make works meaningless. This is a happy talk to start with. You know, we're starting on the really joy thing, I don't think. The second reason is yourself. Chapter 4, verse 4 tells us about the motivation for work. Chapter 4, verse 4. Then I saw that all toil and all skill in work comes from a man's envy of his neighbour. This also is a vanity and a striving after wind. The fool folds his hands and eats his own flesh. Better is a handful of quietness with two hands full of toil and striving after the wind. Again, I saw vanity under the sun, one person who has no other, neither son nor brother. Yet there's no end to all his toil, and his eyes are never satisfied with riches, so that he never asks, for whom am I toiling and depriving myself of pleasure? This also is vanity and an unhappy business. Two are better than one, because they have a good reward for their toil. For if they fall, one can lift up his fellow. But woe to him who is alone when he falls, and has not another to lift him up. Why do we work? Envy of our neighbour, or for the sake of our family? But what happens if you haven't got a family? Why are you working for yourself? What's there to work for? What's the point of working? If you're not working for others, there's not much point working. But the reason people work is envy of their others. And so, there's no point to work hard if you're alone, for to whom will gain from your hard toil and all the pleasures that you've missed out on? And not only is work something that you do for others, but it's something that is better to do with others, for two are better than one and can help each other, and yet it's my envy of my neighbour's wealth that drives me on to work. And there's no end to the appetite that comes from envy. Our appetites can never be satisfied. Look across to chapter 6, verse 7. All the toil of man is for his mouth, and yet his appetite is never satisfied. Look at the wealth of Australia. I've lived long enough here to see the standards of living rise to undreamt of wealth. And yet, has it created more contentment, more happiness in this nation of ours? Are we the wealthy society, also the content continent? Are we happier than our forefathers? Ross Gittins is the economics editor of the Sydney Morning Herald, and he wrote in 2006 about maximising happiness, which is, after all, in one sense, the stated goal of economics, to maximise happiness. But he's really arguing that the economists don't know the way to do it, and they also don't know what happiness is. He says, the evidence is clear that our greatly improved material standard of living hasn't made us any happier. And it's not just that our heightened materialism has failed to work. There's evidence that those who strive most for wealth tend to live with lower well-being. He goes on, it's just as clear that our preoccupation with earning has tended to crowd out our relationships. We're not as happy, and we have worse relationships. And so he then gives us five tips for happiness. It was written around 2006, just at Christmas time. Firstly, focus on the human, not the material. Good advice for an economist, isn't it? Secondly, work on making other people happy, not yourself. Well, that's an extraordinary thing to be said, isn't it? For acquisition of wealth seems to be what life is about. Thirdly, seek benefits that are intrinsic, not instrumental. What does it mean? Well, he says, do things for their own sake, not because of the income or status you hope that they will bring you. This is particularly true of work. Humans were built to work, and work well done is capable of bringing us great satisfaction, he says. Fourth, strive for balance. He says contrast is enjoyable, a change is as good as a holiday, and a balanced life is likely to be more satisfying. Work is good, a career is good, family is good, leisure is good. It's just a question of getting the decent balance. It's a mistake to dream of never having to work. If you never work, you never get a holiday. Fifth, cultivate optimism and practice contentment. He says there's much evidence that optimistic people tend to be happier. Their assessment, listen to this bit, their assessment may not always be realistic, but they're always conducive to positive emotions. So, it might be completely stupid to be optimistic, but you'll be happier. So, be optimistic, even though the world's falling down around you. Now, while this advice is based, he says, on research and the opinion of experts, And there are experts who give you the opinion. Professor Seligman, the great psychologist, gives you the opinion. Always be optimistic, even though it's irrational. Yet, Mr. Gittins had to apologise to the Sydney Morning Herald writers. He says that he was sorry for his Salvo upbringing, Salvation Army, his Salvo upbringing showing through in his lists of how to be happy. Pure economists will not say, first, focus on the human, not the material. Second, work on making other people happy. That's not economics. That's Salvation Army. That's Christianity. That's where he's got that from. But come back to the book of Ecclesiastes. The first two problems that make work meaningless is, one, death. Two, self. Where do I fit in self in relationship to other people? Thirdly, one, is ignorance. For although humans are very clever, the cleverest creatures on the universe, yet we remain fundamentally ignorant of what work is about, and we don't understand the work of God, and we don't understand the work that God has given us to do. So chapter 3, verse 11, Ecclesiastes 3:11. God has made everything beautiful in its time. Also, he's put eternity into man's heart, yet so that he cannot find out what God has done from the beginning to the end. Or chapter 7, verse 13, 7:13, consider the work of God. Who can make straight what he has made crooked? Or chapter 8, verse 17, 8:17. Then I saw all the work of God that a man cannot find out the work that he has done under the sun. However much a man may toil in seeking, he will never find it out. Even though a wise man claims to know, he cannot find it out. Or 10:15. The toil of a fool wearies him, for he doesn't know the way to the city. Or 11:5. As you do not know the way, the spirit comes to the bones in the womb of a woman with child, so you do not know the work of God who makes everything. Oh, this is pretty depressing stuff. Work is not much more than a meaningless activity of our meaningless existence. But yet, in Ecclesiastes, we also read of the enjoyment in work, or the good work. Last set of readings for you, back to the beginning again. Chapter 2, verse 10. Chapter 2, verse 10. And whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them. I kept my heart from no pleasure, for my heart found pleasure in all my toil. And this was my reward for all my toil. The reward from my toil was that I enjoyed my toil. Or 2:24. There is nothing better for a person than that he should eat and drink and find enjoyment in his toil. This all toil, this also I saw, is from the hand of God. Or 3:13. Also that everyone should eat and drink and take pleasure in all his toil. This is God's gift to man. Or 3:22. So I saw that there is nothing better than that a man should rejoice in his work, for that is his lost. Who can bring him to see what will be after him? In other words, don't worry about the outcome of the results. Don't worry about the meaning of the results. Don't worry about the end point of your... Just enjoy what you're doing. And if you've got a job that you can enjoy, that's terrific. That's a great gift of God. And it's a pretty sad state of affairs if you can't enjoy your work that you are doing. So I may not understand why I'm working, and I may have mixed motivations in my relationship with myself and with others, and my work may have no eternal significance, and I am mortal, and my death may mean that all that I've done just goes up for nothing, but yet there can be pleasure found in the job that I'm doing. And so I may well enjoy that job, for there's not much else to do but to eat and to drink and be merry and enjoy the work that God's given me. Now, of course, this is not all that the book of Ecclesiastes teaches. But it is interesting how similar the advice of the world is today to the advice of Ecclesiastes. Take God out of the equation, which poor Mr. Gittins seems unable to do, then what do we say about work? Well, it's meaningless, but you may as well enjoy it. Because you've got to do it, and there's a lot of it. And it's better to be in a job you like than a job you don't like. So find a job you like and do it For there's no point, there's no purpose, because in the end you're going to be dead. And, you know, in that hospital ward as you wait for death, you generally are not concerned about the fact of you missing out on the office and what's happening in the office. Generally, most people wake up to the idea that I could forget the office now. Although, I do know of a man who was trading up until the last 10 minutes or so of his death from his phone, from his palliative care ward where he'd been for several weeks. He was still trading to the very end. It wasn't brain cancer, but you wonder. Ecclesiastes' point, though, it points the answer, which actually occurs in chapter 12. Turn there with me. For right at the end of the book, you actually get a different answer. Chapter 12, verse 13. The end of the matter, all has been heard. Fear God, keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. For God will bring every deed into judgment with every secret thing, whether good or evil. In the end, you see, what does God say about work, about life, about everything? Because you can't work it out without the word of God.